encouraging me to turn it into a book. And at that time, NYU got in contact with me and commissioned me to write, to make a performance in response to a eugenics exhibit that they had done. And so I did it because they paid me for it, and I turned it into, it was called Normal Poem. And so I thought this is going to be a triptych called Normal Poem, or Nature Poem, Normal Poem, and Perfect Poem. But they all ended up getting folded into Nature Poem. Yeah.
Oh, but that answered, I mean, one of the top things I was dying to know was, did you write this in triplicate? Did you write it in triple? Because the first, you know, I definitely felt the whole book in three-part sections like that, where there was this, and I was, there was just this, like, approach of, like, okay, what is normal? Mm-hmm. You know, what is natural? What is perfect? Mm-hmm. So that's really cool to hear the backstory about that.
It sounds like you really read it.
I loved it. And I mean, I think it's just, I mean, just to have something that articulated that in such a real way, like, you know, you're going to a bar and mm-hmm. you're getting just over by peanut galleries who are telling you, like, or ask who are, have the, you, they, you know, you're right, nobody dials them up, no one's asked them, but they feel like entitled that they can talk to anybody mm-hmm. marginalized and supply what is normal mm-hmm. for any of us mm-hmm. in the first place.
They're like, you know? Let me come tell you what you are.
And with a side note, I especially loved the excerpts about dating. Mm. Relationships with somebody like that Nature Poem, which I felt like, isn't that just like the jungle,
though? No, it really is.
The mating habits of the jungle and the pitfalls and the dangers of going out there and having somebody assume they know your natural position mm-hmm. in the world, mm-hmm. telling you about that and then wondering why you are so frustrated, and yet, you know, you gotta survive. You still need touch. You still need love. And I was struck by that double-edged sword right there.
Yeah, I mean,
All right, the time is 6:01, and that was Tommy Pico for the KBOO Evening News' in-depth segment. Coming up is Cutie Pock Talk, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee is the third Thursday of each month at 5 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station, KBOO. Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
The Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome to Cutie Pog Talk, where we invite you to sit down and listen to what's shaping our queer and trans community of color here in Portland.
We are enticing you.
I'm Darian Jones, here
I'm
with...
Zealous Marchant.
It's been a rough few weeks, huh?
I'm a little upset.
Are you?
You
seem a little enraged. I don't want to put words or describe you with adjectives that might be false.
You should just... No, those are correct. The flare in my nostrils and the pink rouge on my cheeks is not something from CoverGirl that I...
It's not a CoverGirl secret?
No, it's not. It's not Maybelline.
Oh, no.
There's no maybe here.
It seems like that might be your body's reaction to trauma.
This is natural blushing from your straight anger.
At least you're here.
Bit. I'm here.
And you're
yeah,
in a piece.
You.
Not sure
I'm
how many.
You
but.
And our audience and our awesome board operator, Kyle, who's very zen like.
Actually, one of the most
big
zen people.
Big heart for you, Kyle. Yeah, I'm upset.
Yeah.
Are you upset?
And I'm pretty upset. I mean, this is like, we have an episode here today around privilege and identity and voice and our history. And, you know, it seems like it's an interesting time in today, I would say. And just this conversation we were just having around, you know, cis male privilege and specifically like, you know, in the community, like I identify as a black gay man and I also identify as cisgender and I understand kind of what that grants me in life with, you know, the way people interact with me. You know, it's weird because I grew up in Beaverton where...
Right, whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop, yeah. and as a male out there, it was interesting where folks would... the privilege, it's like they always treat you in this weird way where it's like, oh, you just don't know any better. Which is how the racism is like impeding within it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not sure if this was kind of along the lines of what you've been experiencing with folks around you. But
yeah, we've definitely just been really upset inside our communities of color, to be honest. I mean, we were talking about that before the mics went hot about just that, you know, and feeling very fiery about different reactions from youth of color in our community, most of which I really applaud, but are definitely reminders to me that we haven't come that far in some ways. I feel not even inside our communities, which I know is a huge touchy subject, but I think it's important, you know. I think it's on a lot of folks' lips. Like, for instance, we have, you know, our new female color police chief.
Oh yeah, Chief
you know?
Brown.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that she's for black people. We were talking about that.
Totally,
where
yeah.
There's that reality where I feel like that doesn't get a lot of attention. So definitely feeling fiery as I go through my day-to-day experiences and I'm encountering different power dynamics that I've encountered since just starting to come out as a little wee queer.
No, a little wee queer
a little
out there.
Wee queer, you know, going, oh my gosh, you still suck. Like, you know, yes, like even in communities of color, like cis, het, black males right now aren't necessarily on my good side. Is how I'm feeling, because a lot of them don't seem to be recognizing privilege. And then there's the intersections of youth.
Yeah.
You know, as I go about and I mentor and I teach and experiencing that dynamic that's still there, where there's this whole unawareness of the privilege, unawareness of where the world is at right now. So it's not just like youthful ignorance, but also on top of that, it was like, oh, I didn't know. I had no idea I had all these responsibilities that I was supposed to do, or I didn't know I was actually supposed to be aware about this, that, or the other thing.
I think it's laziness.
I do think there's a little bit of that. And I do think a lot of it is just privilege.
Right.
You know? But
true.
I just feel so strongly about, even in our activist communities. So I'm feeling fiery on top of news.
News.
Hard,
I mean, there's a lot
news.
Of hard news to hear that's been going on in the world. I mean, you know, today we just kind of finished up a press conference here. I'm losing words, essentially. You can look online and there's already web pages with the top quotes. And I'm pretty sure this literally just finished like an hour ago.
Around
kind of what people saying number 45. I don't even know how to refer to folks.
Number the 45th.
The 45th.
Cheeto Bandito.
Oh, gosh. and kind of just some of the anti-sentiment kind of statements and remarks that he's been saying. I'm curious as to kind of like what this means for us as like a country and as a nation and as like a united people, and like how we're going to be able to kind of band together, especially when you think about privilege and identity. And, you know, just from the story you were just, we were speaking about earlier, and I don't want to divulge too much, but it sounds like, you know, folks who are younger and maybe haven't just been around enough conversations around their own privilege and identity won't learn. And, you know, it's kind of a burden when you're the person trying to get them to engage and trying to teach them. And like, also, you know, being a person of color, when you're being impacted by the mm-hmm. negativity and the oppression of people who have a lot of privilege, it's a huge tax. And, you know, I can only imagine what's going to happen now in our country as more folks, you know, are just staying complacent and ignorant and are kind of tuning out, as, you know, folks like you and I who try to stay engaged, who are forced to stay engaged because we live in the real world and identity, when there's things, you know, kind of coming up, like what was the quote I was looking at
there's
that was
so
about
many. We
Charlottesville
so many.
And like this is like the most insane thing I've heard is like, what about the alt left that came charging at them?
See, my nostrils just flared.
Wait.
Like, I know you're just reading it. It's not you.
Yeah, it's not me. I'm literally just reading this fact that the, you know, the 45th talks about an alt left charging the alt right.
You know, as a journalist myself, when mm-hmm. I was actually working on a different piece when some of my troops behind me in the newsroom were just like, you know, there was lots of like, oh my God, could you believe it? And I was like, what's going on over there? And I was like, oh no, as I saw the video and I stopped to listen. The alt left, I pretty much just guffawed through my nose because I just thought that just was such a clumsy, heavy-handed descriptor.
Right.
And Trump didn't really look all that confident to begin with. I think it was really clear that maybe even his so-called supporters were like, wow, you're really a web of lies and really gross that he would be angling for that term, when I think the consciousness speaks to the fact that it doesn't, political parties don't matter. I'm just gonna say it. It does not, you know. It doesn't. Well, it has not impacted people of color's lives to that effect, where it's a really simplistic line in the sand between the leftists and the rightists and the Democrats and the Republicans. And
do you see the parties as these pillars for people to kind of assimilate to in a weird, I don't want to say Greek life kind of way, but
I see them as, and here I can be biased because journalist, but I definitely see them as labels that are used a lot in upper political spheres more than anything. I know that it's obviously a very real part of mm-hmm. our political system when it comes to how this country is run federally, state to state, voting, all of that. But in terms of the actual temperature of the nation, it doesn't really matter much.
Right. That's really true.
It's not going to, it's, to me, when I hear that, it feels like a slur to me as a cutie pock person. Because it
I want to hear more about this.
These things feel like a slur to me, and I hate them. I hate that I have to work around them in my profession. I hate it because it's a constant reminder and an insult to me that I'm kind of invisible, that my people are invisible, and that whatever decisions are going to be made at that level that is enjoying using words like leftist and rightist, it is delaying the liberation of everybody that I care about, and dividing people. And that's not to say that I believe that there's a big floating green head called the media, because all of us are the media.
That's very true.
To be very clear, like, it's just like the internet. We talk about the internet like it's alive, but the internet is not alive. It is just a bunch of us sitting there in our pajamas late at night stalking each other. Like, it's not a thing. So I hate those terms, and definitely think that Trump threw that out there as just a really quick jab, because clearly I don't think he even has a really good publicist that even was able to give him facts about it, because the reaction has been so quick, and he did not act quick.
No.
So I think he was just grasping at whatever buzzwords worked.
Yeah. And that's what it was. It was a buzzword, because I'm not sure if the term alt-left has been used in many folks' lexicon. Or
maybe in Steve Bannon's home, I think.
Maybe. but I think that kind of, you know, when you think about how the communications from D.C. and the White House have just been so up in the air, in a sense of, like, they're going through communications officers like they're, like, bowls of cereal, it seems like. And
it's like they're a target and not actually right. like a White House. It's
they're not
like
actually
retail.
Being treated as like a real, I guess, communications. Mm-hmm. Like what communications does, which is essentially to funnel all the information out that's going to be appropriate. And, you know, you have things like comments today where Donald Trump literally called counter-protesters the same as white supremacists. And, you know, the backlash from that has just been, like, nothing I don't think he's ever seen before.
I don't know why he didn't think he was going to get that. Like, I mean, that's what just made it almost laughable and a slur to me. It's like, wow, that is the... Like, I just have flashbacks back to, like, grade school lunch bullies.
Mm.
You know, where, you know, maybe they finally realize their power pillar is toppling and they're just like, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, you're stupid. Oh yeah,
my gosh.
You're all terrible. You're all, you know, I'd be using other expletives that we can't because it's radio. But I was looking at that, you know, his talk, for lack of a better word, today and going, bravo, really? Wow, that's really... really lackluster and ugly. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's not ugly, but that's what it looked like to me. Definitely is just like, fine, you know what, you're stupid. It's like, oh, people died,
yeah,
and a white supremacist plowed a car into somebody,
into people,
and like, you have not acknowledged that at all. And I don't
know, he just wanted to make sure the facts are right.
You know, but I think that, I mean, there it is, like, even those who are even halfway evil are probably looking at him like, wow, I thought I was callous. Like, congratulations about that. So,
well, it's interesting too around how, you know, folks can still sit within their privilege when all these things are happening. And I've got some folks that I, you know, have the privilege of living nearby, who I'm not sure if I can bring up the name of this restaurant that was condemned on Williams and Skidmore, or Williams and Mason in North Portland, but it definitely... What was that?
Wink, wink.
That's wink, wink. It was just this restaurant that was about colonialism.
Oh, yes.
And it still exists, and how there are so many folks who, you know, are Facebook friends with me, and they're like, oh, Darian, I see you doing such good work in the community, and I support you and all the stuff that you do, but, you know, you're really political. And I'm just trying to go have my mimosas on Sunday, my bottomless mimosas, and I just don't get what the big deal is. And it's, you know, it's kind of those kinds of things where it's like, when will the ignorance stop and folks actually kind of start engaging in a real way? I don't know. Is that real?
I think it'll stop when they realize the word no applies to them.
Oh.
No, you don't get to drink that. No. You don't get to eat that. No, you don't get to go there. And no, you don't get to be my friend because of that. No, you don't get to have what you want all the time, which is the bottom line of what's going on in this country, is this assumption that we can be told who we are. As people of color, and since it's a cutie pox show, cutie pox, and even just poor people fighting for humanity, is what's going on. We are fighting against the powers of dehumanization, which are really, really tricky and sly, is what's going on. And so that trickles down into our everyday communities. Our everyday communities, down to, well, I want the mimosa. It doesn't, you know, even though they're going to these restaurants that glorify the murder and enslavement of our ancestors.
Plantation,
which, by the way, happened, like, in my great-great-grandmother's time, you know, that's what they're about. Well, I want it. I deserve it. Well, I get to have it.
A lot of them, I think, feel that they're not contributing to the issue. Like, a lot of folks with their privilege and their ignorance don't think about it in that way. And I saw this really interesting Facebook post, like, last night, where a really close person in my life posted that, you know, I'm angry and I'm upset with all of the white people telling me how I should respond to what's happening in our country. And I don't want them to tell me how to experience my feelings. And there was a slew of comments, and there's someone on there, not a person of color, who commented that I would say all people. and like strike white people. And it's such an interesting thing where like the privilege comes back and the just per blindness that I think there some people are afforded in life and others aren't. I mean, when you look up the definition of privilege, it's a special right, advantage, or immunity granted to an available only, and available only to a particular person or group of people.
I think they just need to be dropped off at like an all POC event somehow. Just like they can't interact, but they can just like see. Because I think a part of it also is like people, you can't explain privilege to somebody
right.
without talking about. And Tommy Pico went into this in the interview we heard before we came on. Mm-hmm. But you can't talk about that without talking about what's normal, and you can't talk about what's normal unless you talk about what's inside. You can't talk about like what's inside unless you talk about value,
right.
you know, and that what we're talking about here is a large amount of people in America, and it's super unique to America, although it's a global problem, that it doesn't affect them. They don't know what of color looks like. They don't know what black looks like. They don't know what indigenous looks like. And one or two light-skinned people to a lot of people, and here I'm speaking even more specifically to PDX, is a lot. That's a lot to them. And also there's, again, that presumption that they're entitled to tell somebody who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're entitled to tell somebody what their authentic voice is. They're entitled to decide because, you know, everything for everybody. That's really what we're talking about here, because no, it doesn't apply to them, they're thinking. And I often have thought, well, if we could just drop them off in an actual, you know, if maybe there's some way they could just, we could break that third wall and they could just see what actual communities of color do, how we interact. Like, I mean, I think their minds would be blown that it doesn't have anything to do with them and that they are under a really wrong impression of how well they are doing.
Right.
You know, and that these are real lives we're talking about. It's not just a mimosa. You're giving money to something that is profiting off of erasing us and revising history and making it seem like it's all right. And so you're giving money to families and people who believe that, who in turn are going to spend that money perpetuating that in more ways. So it does trickle down, but you know, they have no concept because all they can see is mimosa. They're not actually seeing communities of color.
No, and you've sparked so many things with all of your eloquence. And well, seriously, in a sense of when we kind of tie it back here in Portland, the biggest and most clear example I have in the queer community is around, you know, the marriage equality. And when we won marriage and we can get married in you know, America, and how for a lot of people who are part of the LGBTQ community, that was it. And they stopped engaging, they stopped showing up to events, they stopped being major donors. And really, you know, I think the biggest issue is that folks don't see how everyone's struggle is intertwined. And I think a lot of folks who aren't privy to being a part of like community organizing just don't really see that side of the world where, you know, no one is free until everyone is free. And that's a real statement that's has real value to it. And you know, you still have folks here who I remember I was on the communications team for this advocacy group, and I got an email that was just like, we've already won all these rights, and now you like, because we're trying to get inclusive trans healthcare, and they were saying, oh, and now you want special rights. And it's coming from a really affluent like cis white gay man who said that. And I think a big issue is that there's no intentionality around taking a step back to say, maybe I am doing something wrong, and not always being on the defensive and just kind of always coming at people who are asking you to review your privilege. And it's just, you know, it's one of the biggest issues I think that will kind of inhibit the growth in our community. I mean, like, I think communities of color are doing a great job with building each other and holding each other accountable in the best ways here in Portland, but there's a really big kind of resistance from white folks to engage and not to shut out people of color because they actually call them out around their privilege. And I'm kind of just, I don't know, I'm at a loss for what's going to happen here in the next few months in Oregon as so many more folks start engaging, because I've seen, you know, 15-year-olds, which isn't like too young, but 15-year-olds actually out marching and protesting and going to demonstrations and actually getting engaged. And those are going to be the majority folks here. Like, you know, I'm a person of color, but I'm nowhere near the magnitude of the generation that's going to take over here in the next 20 years. And I think mm-hmm. people have to really be ready for that. And, you know, this combo is getting really deep. We're going deep. But
hopefully empowering. Like, we talk about the hard stuff. We make jokes.
Inappropriate. I got a really good joke that's about to happen before this break because when I was like going through the song selections, I was just like, what should the first song be? Because I always try to find like Cutie Pop songs, and the set list today is Cutie Pop, except for this first song, which could be unidentified Cutie Pop. Let me know. serious though, let me know. And I could not help but to like hit our listeners with that. You know, Luis Fonsi, the Despacito. Mm-hmm. So I hope y'all enjoy this nice, nice tune.
Sabes que ya llevo un rato mirándote. Tengo que bailar contigo hoy. Vi que tu mirada ya estaba llamándome. Muéstrame el camino que yo voy. Oh, tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso. Oh yeah, ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todos mis sentidos van pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza. Oye,
despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma las paredes de tu laberinto. De tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. Vamos a hacerlo en una playa en Puerto Rico, hasta que las olas griten ay bendito, para que mi sello se quede contigo.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Que me enseñes a mi boca tus lugares favoritos.
Favorito, pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Hasta provocar tus gritos y que olvides tu apellido.
pasito.
I think that's actually really a really good segue into it. Well, I think, you know, it's, you know, we're kind of looking at where the privilege
is. Just lit the microphone on fire with my gaze tonight. Is it smoking right now?
It's kind of smoking. Oh my gosh. Good thing we're not live on Facebook right now. Where it's, you know, I've totally had so many people try to tell me my experience is flawed. And did you look at it?
My
like
brother
this?
Told me that once.
Welcome back to Cutie Pock Talk,
Welcome
folks.
We're just a little upset.
it's a warm day in the studio. Yeah.
Yes, welcome back. We want you to know that we care about you.
We
welcome.
Do. We're here. We're having a conversation around privilege, identity, and how, you know, people of color are constantly deprived of their reality and their lived reality and experience by, you know, white people, in a sense of it's just this weird ownership that some people feel like they have of your thoughts and your yes. experience. You know,
Darian, that we were just talking about how that also happens like in our own communities, which I'm so burnt up about right now.
I'm excited for our caller, Cameron, who is going to call in. And Cameron, you know, once he does, though, I'm excited because this person is also another like queer black man who yep. happens to live in Portland. Who
he's got lots of secrets.
I'm certain he's got lots of secrets. I see him on the Facebook, and there's plenty of white folks who will confuse us in Portland, and there's also black folks who do the same thing. And it used to only happen where they'll be like, "Oh, Cameron." And I'll be like, no. And now it's become like, no, you are Cameron. And
they'll literally be like, are you sure? You are.
Are you sure?
Who I, you will be.
And
who
I have
I tell
to use my Facebook
be.
As my ID to tell people
it's
that I am who I say I am.
It's a good thing I'm not your bodyguard.
And yeah.
Boom. Right, oh my gosh, right no. in the kisser is what I would do.
Boof. Boom.
Just like that.
Oh my gosh.
And I'd be like, say his name.
Yeah, Cameron. And they probably would still say Cameron. We're like, you know, and it's so interesting about how our communities are constantly kind of split apart. And part of that kind of off-air conversation that we had was just this thread that you were looking at with your feed open. And how
I just left my Facebook open like a darn fool while I was working on a project last night. Mm-hmm. Facebook is pretty much just like reading the comments on any news page USA. Like, yeah. It's just like not good. And I had to watch, I see how what I did that. I had to watch yeah. all these white people, many of whom I'm hanging out with, mm-hmm. you know, now and again, a lot of people I don't hang out with anymore, you know, congratulating themselves on working so hard to see the other side of the story, you know, and blaming mm-hmm. the media for dividing everybody
totally
into labeling the, you know, the people in Charlottesville and all these other cities, of which there's 900 and I think 17 white supremacist organizations that have been in America for a very long time. That's not
number.
A small amount.
Yeah.
About how we just all need to compromise. We need to just see the other side of the story. And in every thread, there was those two people of color that were like, congratulations for thinking outside of the box and like being the underdog and working really hard to present a different view that will lead us all hopefully someday into a world of unity. And I just wanted to reach through the screen and
right
strangle these two like people of color and all these threads, you know. I was like looking for the safety pin on them.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Looking for, I was just, you know, that's eventually, I just shut the computer.
Well, it's weird too, where it's like how complex that entire situation is, where
right.
you have someone supporting fascist supremacists that want to actually kill people
right.
of color.
I just, right.
And then you have, I would say, a brainwashed few people of color who are somehow have convinced themselves that these people are meaning so well with all these egalitarian views around we're all created the same, but we're not, but they really want us to all be the same, but they're not seeing your color, and then you end up carrying the burden of trying to shepherd them into the truth.
Shepherd them, yeah. The truth, like that. Like, I ended up writing 3 or 4 pages in my little journal I keep my writings in because I was so infuriated with how casual the word truth is thrown around today.
Mm.
I hate it. I hate it. Because it's not real truth what everyone's talking about when they're just like, I'm trying to see the other person's side of the story and get to the real quote unquote truth, you know, but they're not talking about accountability.
Right.
You cannot have truth without accountability, and you cannot have accountability without the data, you know, without the reality of what that situation entailed. You know, and that bothers me so much, like to say, well, we are trying hard to create unity. We're trying to see past all these differences. Let's recognize classism and racism and all of this and the side of the white supremacists and all of that. Nowhere in those statements am I actually seeing the acknowledgement of the numbers of how many people in so many marginalized communities continually to this day are barred from healthcare. Mm-hmm. They're barred from jobs. They are you know, excommunicated from their families for who they are, even in our own communities, especially, you know. So, and I'm just like, that's not truth, though. You're erasing that experience.
Part of the issue, too, I see, is the fact that the people who have to get these numbers, who have to do this research, who have to find these figures, are the people of color. And how that essentially just takes away from their quality of life. When your entire life is researching how your people are dying.
Maybe we should just have, like, tell our Venmo accounts or something, and people can just donate.
Please, yeah. Send, we can make a cutie pie.
I'm gonna call it the Zelos No Nightmare Fund.
The Zelos No Nightmare Fund.
I'm just tired of it.
Yeah.
I'm at that point now where it's just like, I can't, like, feed me, cradle me, help me not have nightmares.
I don't know how to do that, but we've got a caller on the line.
Me too. I think Cameron's finally here.
Cameron Witten, are you on the line with us today?
Yeah, I hear that we're sharing a Venmo account.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're already ready.
Yeah, I'm really like, I think we expect the next several Cutie Pock talks to be like, and here's our G-Money accounts and our Venmo accounts.
In case I was in a store and someone bought Bitcoin, used Bitcoin IRL yesterday, and I was so taken back. I was so taken back. The cashier was confused.
I am a equal opportunity receiver.
I'm not against Bitcoin. I just never seen someone use it in a grocery store. Actually, so confused.
I'm not sure.
Even Bitcoin's against Bitcoin now. They split up, actually.
It's what?
There's 2 Bitcoins now.
Oh.
I knew it. Duplicity.
They're libertarians. They can't stay together very long.
No.
Like everything else in America. Ba-dum-boom.
Oh. This is taking such a turn today on Cutie Pock Talk.
Hey, not all Americans are white supremacists. Let's
Oh!
I'm going to be laughing about this one all week. America is like the Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh. This doesn't work.
Easily separated.
Bad people on all sides.
Well, welcome, Cameron Witten.
Hi.
Cameron, you're such an amazing force in the community, and just for all of our listeners who don't know about Cameron Witten, community activist, former executive director of New York City. I don't know if he's a spy, but he's also a citizen journalist. I don't know if you've seen his Facebook feed. Oh, you're no longer citizen journalist?
I just did some live stream from Minneapolis yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday. That
seems current.
He's current.
Exactly.
He's bona fide.
Yeah.
Current citizen journalist.
Yeah. I said current.
Was that a Bitcoin
I'm
joke?
So sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get your title confused on live
Good
radio.
Good job, Darian.
Might be. So, Cameron, it sounds like you're out there on the ground with a lot of the issues that we're kind of horrifically watching here in Portland.
Yeah, I'm literally laying on the ground right now, so you are correct.
Okay. Anything on the ground you'd like to report?
Well, I'm reporting right now from Mississippi, which is not Mississippi River in Minneapolis. Things are very nice here. There was a march that I attended yesterday outside of the GOP office. And here's the thing. They marched through a black neighborhood, which, yes, there's some issues around that. But, like, there was a black neighborhood to march through.
That's
so that was something that really ticked me aback. And for them, I interviewed some people, and they said that was actually one of the larger marches. And I think it is interesting because of the politics that's happening right now in Minnesota, of all places. You know, we're talking about that, but The fact that here is where Justine Damon died, also Sterling, we can talk about. But they were also talking about the fact how it seems that whenever a white person, you know, is killed by state sanctioned violence, or Heather Heyer, for example, was not killed by the state, but also just a high-profile white person who was killed due to bigotry, extremism, systemic oppression. And it seemed, and then activists there were telling me that this seemed like it was one of the bigger protests people have been a part of. And so that's really interesting. The same thing happened in Portland, too, actually, when we had the Max track stabbing, where we had these two brown girls who were obviously targets of hate crime, and yet the whole community really focused on these three heroes and really promoted up these three figures. And you know, I've been working with the family to make sure they get the resources that they need, and they've really been left behind. You know, there's been different groups who said they'd give them money and give them support and have done nothing for them. So I think that is something that, and it's interesting because people who I interviewed in Minnesota kind of, I have not, unfortunately, been listening to what y'all have been saying because I can't listen to KBOO from Minneapolis. But interviewing people there, people of color in Minnesota, they kept saying, oh, yeah, they say this is a progressive place. They say they're open to all people, but that's what they say all the time. And you know, it's very frustrating. They don't really include us. They think that they're really gay, right, but they always promote white supremacy. I was like, damn, are you sure you're not from Portland? So I really felt like I've not traveled too far. That's my from the ground.
So things are intense.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of like a worldwide kind of intensity with folks, and it's, I don't know. I'm not sure. Just mind tangent. Did you all see the article with the Swiss Hotel today?
No.
Tell me more.
Oh my gosh! Like this was a whole new thing.
I was going to say, do
like,
I want to know?
White people are turning on other white people, so you know the world's getting wild. just saying. Like,
so what happened?
There was a sign posted that said, to our Jewish guests at the Swiss Hotel, please take a shower before you go swimming, and although after swimming, if you break the rules, I'm forced to close the swimming pool for you.
To our Jewish guests?
Yeah.
To our Jewish
Swiss,
guests.
The Swiss Hotel, which has now been taken off of like book.com.
No.
It's kind
of. Where is the Swiss Hotel?
A wild.
A Swiss hotel as in Switzerland?
Yeah, it was in the. It's an Alpine establishment. It's in Eastern Arosa. Oh. Arosa, yeah. In Swiss.
Confess.
Outside of Davos. So it's kind of.
Do I look like I've been to Switzerland?
No, I haven't been to Switzerland.
I'm just boycotting this place.
I don't know what to say. Part of me was like, clearly this is a Swiss-themed hotel in America.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Oh, and the person was saying that they had received complaints about people needing to shower. And so they had nothing left but to put up a sign.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't understand how no one can, that person who wrote this can't even comprehend what they just did. Like, literally. And I'm just, you know, I know that
especially
was a site.
In this day's age of Snapchat, like, you should know, if you put up a bigoted sign on your business, that's just going to be Snapchatted within seconds. And the world's going to see. So it's just weird.
Someone needs to set up a Sarah A account for the
people
the
think Swiss
they can place.
Get away with that kind of bigotry in this time of age.
Well, I don't think that folks really are ready for the kind of backlash that, you know, our generation and at least folks who can use the internet are going to kind of rain upon them. And, you know, it kind of just seems like it's kind of drawing back around like Portland and like how, you know, I really want to like call out this place, but I can't. It's just this restaurant that's still.
Do you want me to call out the place? You want me to write? You can write it down on paper and then I'll say it.
Oh, say the name. Oh, can I just be like Saffron, formerly Saffron?
Because everybody knows. Yeah. Saffron.
And just how you can create drinks named after plantations, you know, and not recognize.
Oh, but did they rename the
Bork? Yeah, a British restaurant overseas colonial.
You messed that up. British Overseas Restaurants Corporation.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I still think it's colonial, but it's corporation at the end.
Well, isn't that kind of. Yeah, I did the same thing there, pretty much.
And how, you know, there were protests here in Portland. People, you know, kind of denounced this place outside. And the publicist at the time used a really vile word to refer to women who were there. Ew. And you know, also the owner called my friend a Negro.
No, I didn't hear about that.
Definitely, ooh. Yeah. So it's kind of, yeah, but these things around? Are swept under the rug.
And your best friend's a Negro.
And yeah, I guess. And it's just like those kinds of things where, like, I don't know how anyone can comprehend that naming, you know, a cocktail after, like, six plantation named cocktails. Like, where is the understanding the, like, emotional trauma that you're going to cause for people? And, you know, I'm sure the excuse that, oh, I'm from England and I don't know your American history, does it?
Oh, that's baloney, because I've worked with a lot of people from the UK for decades, and
right.
they're not
like that. And then you have
I'm going to go make a British colonial restaurant and make people drink these awful
plantation drinks. And have an entire city kind of protest against me and still exist. And you know, I think it just shows around kind of how people's privilege are, which kind of goes back to what this is all around, is folks are complicitly ignorant and don't want to do the kind of internal work to engage. And maybe, I don't know what that
it goes back to voice, right? That's where we kind of were going, was just authentic voice. Cutie pox, people of color, marginalized people, what our real voices are. And that there's a large contingent of people who don't like being told no. And I also think inside communities of color, there's a lot of people who are also not comfortable standing up for themselves and their communities and saying no. Thus, we have these people of color smattered in some of these really vitriolic threads congratulating white people on taking the middle path.
Right.
You know? I think this is what it's about. It's like, I think our country needs to get comfortable with no. Because no is a beautiful word. It can also open up to a whole world of yes once you have boundaries that say, okay, this is sacred to me, or this is important to me.
Why do you need the space?
You know, why do you, right? Or this, that. Like, I think that's also a hard talk, is we are different and that's okay. You can never know what it's like to be in my community, my family in this way. And you don't get to be nubby about it either.
Right.
And you should be fine with that. Some things are off limits and you need to spend that time focusing on you and your culture and where you would like to go. Because what's really going on here, and James Baldwin spoke to it better, you have to ask yourself why you need a Negro.
Yeah.
I am not a Negro. I'm not your squaw. I'm not any of that. I'm a human being. So you have to ask yourself then, why are you working so hard to create a label that only feeds you? Because I'm not a Negro, and lots of other people are not. We're human beings. So that's the bottom line here, is the beauty of no, and that a lot of people just don't want to have to accept that. They don't. They're into consumption.
Yeah.
They're into the entitlement. We say entitlement, but what it really boils down to is, you know, they're not willing to recognize off limits and not willing to recognize that you don't get to have or be a part of something. And that's not bad. You know, full disclosure, like, my primary is white, and these are big talks that we have, and we're fine with it. Like, it's a reality that they know. There's many times where that they're not what I need, nor can they be. And that's okay. And vice versa. There's no way they can ever walk the path that I'm walking as a trans person, mixed race person of color, you know, a black trans person. There's no way, you know, and that's fine. It doesn't make it difficult, perhaps, but, like, that's also power dynamics, race power dynamics in relationships, but also in America, where America's really sick with, I got to have it all, and we all have to be together in this, and we all have to be the same. You do not need to be the same in order to be deserving of civil treatment. That's it. No is a beautiful word, and America needs to get comfortable with that. We have our own voices.
Well, I think another issue, too, is that kind of what I've heard you describing is just like the basis for having good communication, which, you know, is a shared understanding. It's not really agreeing on the same thing, but it's at least acknowledging the realities that folks have. And it seems that's not something we do really well as a country.
No, I think we have like people. A codependent situation in this country where that communication is meant so far that we have to do do all these things together. We have to completely be on the same page, but...
Or anti.
Or, right, exactly. But there just really needs to, in my humble opinion, needs to be a an honoring of the fact that we have different experiences that should be acknowledged, and that because of that, it's not okay to mow somebody down. Yeah. It's not okay to give money to people who you know in the end will be pouring all their finances against whole cultures. That's not okay, you know. And if you care about humanity, then that will matter to you, down to your mimosa. It'll matter.
Right.
Yeah. That's all she wrote. Sorry.
No, no, I think that's
mic drop.
A lot of,
come on, Cameron, jump in there. Come on.
How am I supposed to follow that?
I don't know.
Well, I'm curious as the sentiments that you've seen here, Cameron, in Portland, and also as you've been on your travels, because I know you've encountered a wide variety of different folks. And some of the posts that you've shared on Facebook seem kind of along the same lines of just sheer frustration. And
yeah, I can talk about my Sunday. I got to Minneapolis at 6 a.m. and I decided, because I'm a person of faith, to go to church. Oh, let me know, like, what about a duck? Anyway, so I went to church, and so I'm a Universalist. I go to Unitarian Universalist Church. And I went to the one in Minneapolis, which first thing that I noticed was that they got more brown people in that church, which isn't saying much. They maybe had like 8. So compared to Portland, like, that was a huge deal for me. And what for me was so surprising. So, you know, my church, for people who don't know, Unitarian, very old, white, wealthier congregation of people, but very much involved with social justice. You can see the church downtown in Portland, also one in Minneapolis. They have signs that say Black Lives Matter. So they very much care about social justice. I have a policy, because Unitarians, what they love to do is sing African spirituals. So you can just close your eyes, and imagine a bunch of white people trying to sing Amazing Grace or whatever kind of black spiritual. It's bad. It's offensive for me. It's truly offensive. It's past a level of cultural appropriation, which I know that's the thing people don't understand, but it's different when you're talking about somebody's spiritual. Like, you can talk about Beyonce, so you sing Beyonce, and that's not cultural appropriation. But we're talking about spiritual things that came out of the actual struggle, the struggle that people will deny of slavery, that people all recognize slavery is bad. These are songs that came out of the struggle of the black experience, and they come with a very specific essence with them, how they sound, how they are sung, why they are sung. And you have these white people who do not have any of that history, who are the ones who owned the slaves who made these songs, and they're singing these as if they're paying homage, but they are stripped of everything. So I walk out during African spirituals. Oh. This entire service that I went to, they sang 4 African spirituals, and then the minister read a reading from some black intellectual, and then went on a whole sermon about how cultural appropriation is wrong, but if you recognize the history, it's all good. So went on this whole thing about how much she loves black people and how much the whole congregation needs black people, and yet for some reason you don't got black people in your congregation. I'm just wondering, if you're going to spend a whole fucking hour, I could cuss, if you take a whole hour of your church service to talk about how badly you need black people, go to a black church and be a part of that culture. But you love telling your other white people how not racist you are, so you can make yourself think you're not racist. But that's what white supremacy is. And so it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. It seems like wherever I go, I'm reminded. Even the white folks who say, I care about the black experience, and yet they go home to their white neighborhood, sip on their $10 kombucha, and they live their life. They live their stereotyped life, and they think they can dip their toe into the black pain, the black porn, the trauma, and say, I care for this moment, and then they go back home into their comfort, into their safety, completely sanitized of blackness, and they think they're okay. But that's not the way this is going to work. If we're truly going to live in a multi-generational, multi-racial, truly equal, just society, we can't have these sterile lives where you can choose when you engage with blackness or not.
Mm-hmm. I feel you on that one. This just ties back into everything we've been talking about in terms of why don't they see you? And they're going, it's just a mimosa. And it's like, you know, do you not see where there's no people of color in your groups or organizations? Mm-hmm. And know those two light-skinned people don't count. Like, it does not, I mean, like, yeah, that should tell you a lot. But I guess that just goes back into the mimosa complex I keep bringing up. Well, no, the mimosa effect, where
I love that. Coin that term.
I'm going to just, you heard it here first, folks. The mimosa effect is when they have never been around people of color, really, like en masse, that their perception is skewed. You know, they have no concept mm-hmm. for what exactly they're buying into. It's almost like the
plantation mimosa.
It's like the Ben Franklin effect, you know, but with mimosas or with Negro spirituals that shouldn't be sung in Unitarian churches by white people.
Please, no, please stop.
Right, right. This goes back to the power of no. No, you don't get to do that. You do not. That is not, it's incredibly disrespectful. People died trying to escape to freedom. Those are our map routes to freedom, literally. Keys to freedom in those songs. You should not be singing that in Jeebus' name
at all. Just don't fake it.
Right. You don't get to have that. You don't.
Dump you Stop so it. Many times.
We have four people on the dump button because of you, Cameron Witten. Settle down. Seriously.
I didn't even notice.
Don't make me come over there, okay? Don't make me.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to have to invoke my She-Ra-like powers to... But...
I'm so sorry.
Settle down, I know. I got you. We got you. We're excited, I know. But and all jesting aside, no, I feel like ranting is a good place to be. Like, I'm really tired of being told that I have to come up with an answer. I'm kind of like, y'all come up with an answer. I'm trying to, like, have a life right now.
Yeah. One of the best examples, was Daniel Outlaw. Yes, awesome, we have a black woman as police chief. Very first speech, prepared speech, goes up to the police and the media and says, I'm not here. I don't want to say it, but I'm not here for reform.
Right.
And so myself right. and a bunch of other actors were like, that was really messed up. Daniel Outlaw, if this was their new police chief, should not be coming out here saying this. And I was bombarded by tons of well-meaning white people who were like, oh, but give her a chance. How dare you, like, criticize her? She hasn't had a chance. Oh, da, 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 da. I'm like, are you serious? I am supposed to, as a person who faces the systemic oppression of the police, once again, allow my oppression to take the back burner so that this person can use my mm-hmm. struggle as a bargaining chip, and mm-hmm. it's my fault for not giving her a chance to not say something like that off the bat. Like, that's the thing. I should have a chance to rant about that. That was not cool, what Daniel Outlaw said. And
right.
that all these white allies who think that Daniel Outlaw is the best thing for racial justice, will talk to the black people who actually live in the city, who experience police brutality, and say, hey, you're not letting this outsider police chief who's in administration have the chance to once again oppress you and disappoint you like all the other ones have.
Preach, Cameron Witten. Sorry. Preach. Don't you ever say sorry to me like that again. You preach. But I know all of us were thinking it. We were like, we've seen this one before. Any of us who are old enough to remember other, you know, black luminaries come and go, and it's like, come on, like, and that angers me the most, that white people are like, look, we've hired somebody of color, and I have so many feelings about that, or look, we've hired somebody trans or whatever, but we haven't actually mm-hmm. learned how to treat each person and treat these communities that we're holding it up right. going, look, they can do no wrong, look how black they are, look how trans they are, and yet, you know, I mean, many of them are not working for these our communities at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and the complexities mm-hmm. of that, where like they have navigated these dangerous, racist, classist, oppressive fields to do what they love, and that comes at a price.
Yeah.
It comes at a price. So shut up about whether or not we need to give them a chance. That is how little you need to be, you should not even be saying anything, because mm-hmm. it's neither here nor there. And that, you know, that's why things like leftist and rightist are slurs to me. It's like, shut up. Just shut up, because you have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are complicit. Your mouth should be closed right now. It should be closed. you know. Like, absolutely. I feel you on that one. I was side-eyeing that as soon as the news story came across my desk. It was like,
Front page of
the
Oregonian.
I was waiting for it this year. I think I even said it in the newsroom. I was like, everyone's like, I wonder who the news police chief should be. I was like, I bet it's going to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're running out of answers now. Quick, we gotta. That is the only thing that's ever made an organization plug anybody in marginalized is desperation, which also just irks me, you know. And then we have to spend the time either, you know, being complicit in the system just to, you know, excel in some ways, or fighting it tooth and nail to say, no, you don't get to treat me, us, them like this now that we're here, you know.
It's fiery in here.
It's
but it's good. It's hot. It's like you're relinquishing Caliente. Your phoenix flames right now. You're renewing yourself.
I think my bat wings are on fire. I think I grew a new set of bat wings. Actually, I have 8 pairs right now.
Oh gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm gonna get home. Actually,
you can't fly with them.
No, they're just here to intimidate and make a scene.
No, but I think, you know, this has been a really powerful conversation, especially for our listeners out there. Like,
hopefully.
And hopefully, you know, if you're not a person of color, a white person, and you're listening to the show, that you've actually been able to kind of digest some of this. Because it's probably a really thick pill to swallow, some of the stuff that we've been talking about. And, you know, it's
or a mimosa.
Or a mimosa. Thick mimosa. I hope you're not drinking a mimosa right now.
But it depends on where. Was it homemade?
Was it homemade? It's all right. But, you know, just really being able to let people of color share their experience authentically and not try to construct how they should feel for them. And I know that this probably to our listeners was like, oh my gosh, I feel like they're just going off on all us white people.
Well, we are.
But it's just, I think if anything, when people of color are expressing frustrations to white folks, it's a privilege for them to actually listen. Because there's a lot of lessons to be learned and a lot of knowledge.